want to back up from that just a little bit and ask you if you ever wonder what the day after Jesus' crucifixion was like. So, like, yesterday. It was the Sabbath, which meant that it was supposed to be set apart as a day of rest and a day of worship. Traditionally, people went to the synagogue that day. Often friends and family gathered for a meal. They had kind of a leisurely afternoon. There was no work permitted on that day. It was a day that had been set apart by God from the beginning. Back in Genesis 2, as part of the creation story, we read that God blessed the seventh day and he hallowed it. That means he made it holy. He set it apart because on it, God rested from all the work that he'd done in creation. And yet I wonder what that day was like that year for Jesus' disciples, for all of the people who were so mostly connected to Jesus. I can't help but wondering what it must have been like for the Apostle Peter. Because the day before, while Jesus was being interrogated, while Jesus was being tried, while all sorts of false accusations were being thrust at him, while Jesus was being beaten and tortured and eventually crucified, Peter wasn't there. He was denying that he even knew him. I wonder what Saturday was like for him. I wonder what it was like for James and John. Because before Jesus was arrested, he'd been in a garden and he'd been praying, and he one of the gospels says it was like he sweat drops of blood. His grieving was so deep in that garden as he prayed. And he'd taken three friends, James and John were among them, to go and be with him, to stay by his side as he prayed, as he suffered. And they fell asleep because they were tired. I wonder what Saturday was like for them. I wonder what it was like for Mary's mother, for Mary, for Jesus' mother, Mary. I wonder if she spent the day remembering all of his early years. I wonder if maybe she held his baby blanket or told stories to others about what he was like as a toddler. See, the Sabbath was supposed to be a day of rest, a holy day that was blessed by God. And I imagine that all of Jesus' disciples really needed that rest. I can't imagine, though, that they felt blessed by God that day. And I wonder if they also echoed Jesus' cry from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken us? The day before the Sabbath, the world had turned dark for the afternoon. The earth shook and the sun disappeared, and then Jesus died, but it took him hours to die. It would have been excruciating, not just for Jesus, but for those who loved him, those who were there amid the cheering and the jeering crowds. Jesus was then buried with haste. There wasn't an elaborate processional to the grave. It may have just been Joseph, who was the person whose tomb Jesus was buried in, and Mary Magdalene and Jesus' mother. It would have been rushed because the Sabbath was about to begin, and so they had to get all of this done before the Sabbath began, that day that was set aside for worship and rest, a day blessed by God. And I can't help but wonder if Jesus' friends felt blessed by God on that day. I don't know that I would have felt blessed by God on that day. The day after Jesus was buried, while his friends and his family observed the Sabbath, soldiers secured the stone that blocked the tomb, made it impossible for it to be rolled away. If anyone had thought that they might finish the hasty burial, perhaps by wrapping Jesus' body properly in linens that were laden with herbs and spices, they would have found their way barred and impossible to enter. There was no way. Even if they tried to break the seal, there were soldiers who were standing guard by the tomb to make sure that nobody got into the tomb. The day after the Sabbath, as soon as the light started to peek over the horizon, Mary and Mary went to the tomb. And when they got there, they would have noticed the soldiers right away. Immediately, they would have noticed them standing there. They probably would have felt intimidated by them, frightened by them. It was 2 days before that they had witnessed these same soldiers involved in everything that had resulted in Jesus' crucifixion. They would have noticed the sealed tomb not too long after that. And I wonder if you can imagine that frustration they must have felt. I imagine them saying something like this: "What more trouble can be done? You've already killed him. Leave us in peace to grieve our dead." I mean, I imagine these two women, even with the sealed tomb, wanted to go and just be in the quiet of that place and remember Jesus, and they couldn't even do that well because of the intimidating force of soldiers there. And then the earth started to shake, not a little bit of a quake, but a full-on earthquake. Now, I have never experienced an earthquake before. I don't know if you have, but I imagine that it's pretty terrifying. The ground suddenly unstable beneath your feet, nothing solid to grab onto. I imagine that it's also pretty loud. And I wonder if this earthquake took these two Marys back to the cross, because there'd been another earthquake then. We're told the chapter before in Matthew that about noon, as Jesus was on the cross, the sky went dark. It was like there was an eclipse. The light disappeared, and there was a giant earthquake that shook the whole earth. And I wonder if this earthquake, as they approached the tomb, felt the same. I wonder if it felt like the world was ending. But that earthquake was the arrival of an angel. And this is the only of the Gospels that we hear that the angel arrived in front of the two Marys. This wasn't some kind of gentle cherub or some quaint winged creature all soft and sweet. This angel landed with the force of an earthquake. This angel was as bright as lightning, as blinding as lightning. This angel was terrifying, so much so that those soldiers that were standing guard over the tomb, they shook and they became like dead men. They all just fainted dead away. Now, the two Marys were also terrified. And I can picture them kind of clinging to each other, trying to keep their feet under them, hiding their eyes maybe from the brilliant light that was the angel. And I wonder, especially for Mary, who was Jesus' mother, I wonder if there was anything about this angel that reminded her of that visitation 30-some-odd years prior, when an angel had showed up and said, "Hey, you are blessed by God, and you are going to have his son." I wonder if there was anything in this angel that reminded her of that angel. This angel rolled back the stone, because a sealed tomb was nothing for a being this powerful. A whole contingent of soldiers was nothing for an angel like this. The angel rolled back the stone and sat on it, which I think is a really weird detail that Matthew included. I expect this terrifying divine being to roll back the stone and then stand guard next to the opening with some kind of flaming sword or something, but just being big and mighty and terrifying. But Matthew tells us that the angel rolled back the stone and then sat on it. almost like in such a casual, weird way. It's such a human kind of a thing to do. Oh, I've just done this really hard thing. I need a little break. I'm going to sit on the stone here. And then the angel, from that position, that kind of casual position, the angel says to the two Marys, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He's not here. He's been raised. As he said, come, see the place where he lay." There's this invitational element to this position that the angel has said. He's rolled it open, and he's not rolled open the stone so that Jesus could get out, because Jesus was somehow trapped. He's rolled it open so that the Marys could look in, they could go in, and they could see for themselves that Jesus wasn't there anymore, that Jesus had already been raised. And so as the soldiers lay like dead men not so far from the tomb, the Marys moved closer, and they saw for themselves that the tomb was empty. They knew the truth for themselves of the angel's words, because they had been there when Jesus had been placed inside. These are the same two Marys that, along with Joseph of Arimathea, had gone to lay Jesus into the tomb. They'd been there when the stone had been rolled into place. And so then the angel said to them, "Now that you've seen, go and tell his disciples he's been raised from the dead. And indeed, he's going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him." And so the two Marys, they ran from that place. And Matthew tells us they were filled with fear and joy. And I wonder maybe why they were filled with fear. Why not just joy? Why doesn't Matthew just say they were filled with joy? They had just seen that Jesus had been raised from the dead. Everything that they had been hoping for, longing for, thinking this can't possibly be, was true, that Jesus was raised from the dead, that something miraculous had happened. But Matthew tells us that they were filled with fear. I think that the fear maybe does make sense. I think that anyone who's experienced maybe what they just experienced might actually feel some amount of fear. Maybe the kind of fear that we describe as great awe. Awe over the power of heaven that was displayed in the presence of this angel in the empty tomb itself. I also think that fear makes sense for other reasons because, see, Jesus had been crucified. He had been executed by the government. The chief priests and the leaders of the temple were out for blood. And they weren't just out for Jesus' blood. They weren't done with it. They were out for the blood of anyone who threatened to upset their power and their position. And so a risen Jesus was certainly a threat. Jesus' followers were certainly a threat. These women had been commissioned by an angelic messenger of God, a messenger whose arrival had carried the strength of an earthquake to tell people that Jesus had been raised from the dead. To refuse that commission would have been a terrifying option. But also to fulfill that commission would have been a terrifying option. It was like they were stuck. We can go and do what the angel says and maybe be executed like Jesus was, or we cannot do what Jesus says. And oh my goodness, did you see this angel? don't want to be on the wrong side of him. So the two Marys, they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy, and they did run to tell the disciples. They fulfilled the commission that the angel had given them. And it's great courage that they did this, extraordinary courage that these women showed. Because despite that fear, they went forward. Despite that very real danger that their next move posed, they went forward. They kept going as Jesus had directed them. And as they went, suddenly, there's Jesus. Jesus who they had seen buried, Jesus who they'd seen die, Jesus, who they kind of knew had risen because they'd seen the empty tomb, Jesus right there in the flesh who they'd loved, who they'd known had loved them, was suddenly in front of them, just standing there. Can you imagine what that was like? Out of the horror, the blood, the violence of Good Friday, through the dark and terrible night of loss, through the despair and the abandonment of the Sabbath, suddenly Jesus was there. Suddenly Jesus was there and he was speaking to them. Now, none of us have ever experienced what the two Marys experienced. They are the only ones in all of history who experienced exactly that. But some of us have experienced violence in our lives. Some of us have experienced the loss of people that we loved deeply. Some of us have experienced the darkness of despair and hopelessness. Some of us have experienced real fear. Some of us have experienced our own kind of dark night of the soul, an experience of God's complete absence, of God's abandonment. And it's into those experiences that the risen Jesus appears. It's into those experiences that Jesus speaks to us, just like he did to those two Marys that day. See, that's what Easter is all about. It's about hope that we can cling to in our darkest times. It's about life when all around all we feel is death. It's about joy even when there's fear. This is something that our world needs now at least as much as it needed back then. Because there's a lot in our world that is dark and sinister. There's a lot in our world that is violent and evil. There are those in our world who do still seek to destroy anything that threatens their power. There are those in our world who seek to destroy everything that breathes life and hope. There are those in our world who would crucify Jesus just as easily today as they did so long ago. But none of those is more powerful than God. None of those is more powerful than our risen Jesus. None of those get the last word, because Christ our Lord is risen. When you think about the things that scare you in our world, war and crime and hate, all the things that you fear in the world. None of those is more powerful than God. None of those is more powerful than Jesus. And so we can say with the Apostle Paul, he wrote this in 1 Corinthians 15, death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? Thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And he said, death, but you can substitute anything, violence, hate, war, crime, any of those horrible things that are all linked to death, you can add them all into that statement. Where, O hate, where, O war, is your victory? Where, O war, is your sting? Thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. When the women saw Jesus and heard his greeting, they went up to him and they worshiped him. They knew without a shadow of a doubt that Jesus was who he claimed to be. He was the Son of God who was, as John's gospel puts it, in the beginning with God and was in fact God. The women went to Jesus and they worshiped him. And then Jesus said to them the same thing the angel had said to them, do not be afraid. You have nothing to fear. Do not be afraid, no matter what comes, no matter what threatens you, no matter what those with power in this world or the next may do to you, do not be afraid. You have nothing to be afraid of, because God is more powerful than all of that. Jesus is more powerful than all that. Jesus, who was dead, is alive. Jesus is the light that shines in the darkness, the light that the darkness did not and cannot put out. There is a lot to be afraid of in this world, but we don't need to fear it, because Christ our Lord is risen. Death has been conquered. Violence has been conquered. Hate has been conquered. Sin has been conquered. As one commentator put it, in the resurrection we have God's promise that life is stronger than death, that love is stronger than hate, that mercy overcomes judgment, and that all the sufferings and the difficulties of this life are transient, real, and palpable, and sometimes painful for sure, but they do not have the last word and do not represent the final reality. This is why Easter matters. It's not just about hope for life after death. It's hope for this life. It's not just hope for a better world when Jesus returns and God's kingdom is fully come. It's hope for a better world right now, a world into which God's kingdom has already broken. Where are you in the story of today? Are you here with Jesus, worshiping the risen Christ alongside the two Marys? But maybe you're not there yet today. Maybe you're still back at the crucifixion, mourning and lamenting the violence and the horrors of this world. Maybe you're back at that day in between, the day after the crucifixion, the day when God seemed to be dead, the day of darkness and despair. If you are there, hear me say that that place is not the final place. That story is not the final word. Jesus has risen. Death has been swallowed up in victory. The light that came into the world will never be extinguished by the dark. Because Christ is living, is risen. Life has conquered. Hope reigns over despair. Joy reigns over fear. Love is the final word. This is what it means that Christ has risen.